Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Bichette. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Monday, November 1st, 2021. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or listening through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people and using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever discovered, encountered. These tools are available absolutely free at whyagain.org. If you go to that website and click on the Start Here link in the upper left-hand corner of the page, it'll take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that chapter of that book provides a narrative description of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool I've been using to great effect for the past 17-plus years to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships and to turn any negative emotional experience into part of the infallible guidance system that each one of us has been given. You can also download the actual worksheet itself. It's a simple PDF file. Click on the link. Download it, print it off, and use it as often as you'd like. Absolutely free. You can download a whole host of audio files of shows just like this one where people have been either stepped through the worksheet process or given powerful testimonials about how the work has improved the quality of their lives. You can also go to your app store and type in the three words Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness and get access to a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet, an abbreviated version of that worksheet process, and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. We hope people do that soon and often. When they do, it usually provokes or stimulates comments, questions, answers, testimonials, and that's what we're here for currently, 2 hours a day, 5 days a week. You can call us at 563-999-3581 and press 1, or you can send us an email, thh@mindshifters-academy.org, or you can email Jeannie, J-E-A-N-I-E, at whyagain.org, whyagain.org. We're doing the Course in Miracles workbook lessons this year, and this is the 305th day of the year. Today's lesson simply reads, there is a peace that Christ bestows on us. This is the Christ mind, not an individual person. Who but uses Christ's vision finds a peace so deep and quiet, undisturbable, and wholly changeless, so much so that the world contains no counterpart. Comparisons are still before this peace. So that means comparisons are quiet, comparisons are removed in the presence of this peace, and all the world departs in silence as this peace envelops it and gently carries it to the truth. No more can there be the home of fear. For love has come and healed the world by giving it Christ's peace, the peace of the Christ mind, the ability to see there is no separation, the ability to see the oneness in the flow of creative energy. Father, the peace of Christ is given to us because it is your will that we be saved. Help us today simply to accept your gift and remove any judgment, for it has come to us to save us from our judgment of ourselves. So that's the lesson. Here's the Course in Miracles experiment corollary or commentary from Pam Grout. Lesson 305 is titled, Give Me Five. She quotes Ellen Langer as saying, virtually all the ills that people experience are a result of mindlessness one way or the other. Pam writes, Lesson 305 promises peace, deep and quiet. While it doesn't give specific instructions, I'm partial to following the technique. The following technique, which is notice the now. Instead of trying to count breaths or repeat a mantra or sit on a cushion with a stiff back, I like to give five. I actively behold five new details about wherever I happen to be. You probably think you know the room, the coffee shop, the wherever you happen to be. You probably know it like the back of your hand. But do you really? For that matter, try looking at the back of your hand and notice five new details. The next time you see your partner or a friend, take it upon yourself to notice five new details. When you begin to notice the now, everything you took for granted suddenly springs to life. People, places, and things literally jump out of the box into which your ego tried to stuff them. Through the simple act of noticing, you begin to recognize how frequently you restrain your experience. Today, as I give up control, as I enter the now, I find peace, undisturbed, and wholly changeless. So that's our Course in Miracles workbook lesson and the Course in Miracles experiment commentary. And we're here for your comments, questions, suggestions, answers, 563-999-3581. If you call that number and press 1, it'll put a question mark by your phone number. And I can announce you by your area code, and we'll have a conversation. How would you like to spend this next hour? We've got about 50 minutes left. So, Susan, is that you?
It is. Hi, Dr. Tim.
Welcome. What's on your mind?
Thanks. These are very challenging lessons. Because I am at the moment comparing the idea of a healthy grandson and a grandson who may never be well again, and thinking one is better than the other. One is preferable. And I'm not at peace, and neither is his mother or anybody else. I don't think even he is at peace, but we may be dealing with permanent disability here. I've gotten to the point myself where I wonder if he wasn't heading into mental illness before he took all the drugs, and one reason he took all the stuff he did was to stave off whatever was happening to him. I talked to him today. He says he thinks he's schizophrenic. He's hearing voices. He wants to come and live with us and take ballet lessons. He's a dancer and an actor and so forth. But he also wants to go back to school, which is 6 hours away from here, and finish there and be an actor and have a career. In other words, his thoughts are all over the place. Granted, they are adjusting medications, and Tim Bingham even said maybe they could put him on an antipsychotic, which led me to think, what what would happen if you're given a drug to make you not psychotic? I don't understand what that means as far as the personhood of my grandson goes. Are they just creating another kind of person? You can see I'm all over the place with this, but certainly not at peace and not with the mind of Christ fully operating in here. So I just want to say that it's a very hard lesson because I'm making all kinds of comparisons to what might be and what isn't at the moment, at least, and maybe won't be.
Well, and this this lesson, like so many others, would call us to just observe how do we feel when we make those comparisons? How
right.
do we
Not
feel
good.
When we reject what is?
Right, exactly. But accepting what is just seems impossible right now. So I'm just sitting there. I mean, I don't even know if there's a question in there. I'm just making a report.
Okay. Well, but just notice how you make it seem impossible to accept what is.
Right.
You know, there...
I do.
On my way to work this morning, I was listening to the book. The book is by Winfred Doerr. And I've mentioned this before. The title of the book is Stop Struggling in School. Winfred Doerr, W-Y-N-F-O-R-D, last name, D-O-R-E. And I mentioned this before. What he does is not as important as the process. The process was he was a very successful entrepreneur, a creative genius type guy, private plane, fancy car, nice house, et cetera, and these, you know, four kids. And he was driving around his fancy car in the countryside one day, and he got the call that one of his daughters had attempted suicide. And so, you know, there's a way to look at this that says he absolutely rejected what was. But there's another way to look at it that says he accepted what was and decided to use what he had control over to look for solutions to what was. And he did it in this calm, focused way so that that's where we are most productive. But he didn't go into a tailspin, and he didn't attack the school and say, why aren't you doing more? And he didn't yell at the therapist. And he said, I have to find out if I have this creative genius that I've been using for these business ventures, I need to focus it on how I might help my daughter or people like my daughter. And so, you know, there's a way to look at this and say he sold his businesses, and he started using his considerable financial resources to hire people who were experts in different fields related to the brain functioning in humans and what might be the problem with learning disabilities, etc. So he stayed focused on what was and what he had control over, and he used it to the best of his ability. That's what we would call you to do in this. And notice that when you're not doing that, just notice how you feel. Notice when you think, oh, my God, it's going to be this way forever. Well, you don't know that that's the truth, right? And you can quote experts that say it's forever and he's never going to change, but you don't know the truth of that.
Mm-hmm.
And just notice how it feels when you say he's going to be on permanent disability, this is going to be his whole life. Just notice how that feels. compared to how it feels to, well, he's struggling. I'm going to do what I can. Send him blessings. I'm going to maybe, you know, talk to people that might have resources that might be of assistance. And then I'm going to keep myself in the most loving, respectful, functional space I can, because that's what's best for me and the rest of my family.
Right.
Notice everything else about spinning into negativity and thinking it's all for naught and nothing can change this. That doesn't help anybody.
Right.
And that's what,
that's true.
That's what Pam Grout is just trying to say. Look, just notice. Just be in that, in the present moment. And in this present moment, what's mine to do? What do I have the ability to do? I can send blessings. I can, you know, read a book on, you know, how do you help people who have a psychotic episode? And one of the things that hopefully you'll discover is that many people get a diagnosis of schizophrenia when they have a psychotic episode. And it's not a life sentence. It isn't the truth of them. That word schizophrenia is just a label. And all you know for certain is there's a psychotic process going on. There's an emotional pain. There's a significant disruption in the way this person is observing their reality right now. That's all you know for the truth. And you know, if you listen to Catherine Adams in the interview I did with her, if you listen to the interview with Jim Gottstein, who's the attorney in Alaska who had an episode, and a psychotic episode after he'd graduated, you know, Harvard Law School. And they wanted to label him schizophrenic and put him on meds for the rest of his life. And finally he ran into a psychiatrist that said, well, wait a minute. You know, the history here is you had no episodes of that would lead up to this, and then you had a whole bunch of sleepless nights because you're trying to be an attorney. And anybody, if they're sleep-deprived long enough, can have a psychotic episode. So let's treat this differently. And he's never had another episode since. And the same thing with a number of people if they get early intervention. And if now, of course, if you get labeled and you're in a system that labels you and says, well, if you have a psychotic episode, that means you're schizophrenic and that means it's a life sentence, certainly that system is going to treat you as though there aren't any options. But you don't need to buy into that system. And you don't need to go on the roller coaster ride of emotions that comes from, you know, projecting into the future that this horrible situation is going to remain forever unchanged. So I would just offer that, you know, all of these wonderful tools we have, the reality management worksheet, the EFT tapping and breathing, the resources through Journey's Dream to listen to various people who've dealt with similar situations, to start calling some of them and asking about resources. Any of those would be a different result for you mentally, emotionally, and probably even physically than sitting there thinking, oh my gosh, this is a life sentence for my grandson.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes, I can see how I'm feeding into that. Not only with what I told you, but the fact that we have a smattering of schizophrenics in both Tim Bingham's and my family tree. So it's like, where's this black bird going to land?
Okay, but now listen, when you say we have a smattering of schizophrenics, what you mean essentially is people who've had similar experiences and gotten the label and been, you know, funneled into a system that helps keep them stuck in that rather than help them adjust out of it or live through it in a, you know, like a lot of people understand that many people who've had psychotic episodes and or who were labeled a schizophrenic are really very bright, very creative people trying to get along in a culture that just doesn't have any tolerance for that.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, well, that's true in most cases. There is a case of one cousin of Tim's whose mother insisted he was fine, nothing wrong with him, and she wouldn't get any treatment for him, and he really was virtually homeless at about age 30 and for the rest of his life and died young and so forth. So, you know, all that nice positive outlook and stuff isn't always the answer either. So I'm mad.
But we're not necessarily saying, hey, just take a positive outlook and don't do anything. We're saying there might be treatment options other than what the conventional medical model will look at. And there are people who are just not going to respond, even if they go to inner fire and they learn, you know, more time outdoors and gardening and, you know, artistic expression. And they're not going to break out of it. There are, but the point we're called to pay attention to so often with these people who've been through it is the percentage of people that have that level of dysfunction is much smaller than we're led to believe by a system that takes people in their late teens and early 20s who've had a psychotic episode and slaps the label of schizophrenic on them.
Mm-hmm.
Because so many people have a psychotic episode in that period, and when they get good early intervention, they don't have a whole series of episodes and relapses and a progressive mental and emotional deterioration that stays with them for life.
Mm-hmm.
That's all we're saying. Yeah, there are going to be some.
Yeah.
And the outcome studies for people who are treated with the Soteria kind of, you know, loving, respectful, restful, you know, inpatient residential treatment, the outcome for them is so much better than the people who are treated just loaded with drugs and put in a cold, sterile, locked institution and treated as though they're not even human. And that's the point for me. And then the further point for you is it just to notice, okay, how does it feel when you sit there pouring your mind energy into woe is me, woe is our family, woe is my grandson. He's got this life sentence of negativity. Just notice how it feels.
Yep. Not good.
And when it doesn't feel good, we're encouraged with the Course in Miracles and all of these other tools to just choose again.
Dr. Tim, question about your webinar. Are the talks available now for those of us who couldn't find our way onto the live thing?
Yes. Did you? Yeah. Well, I will make sure you get access to those.
I'm wondering if my payment was never made. I mean, things have been wild around here. Maybe I imagined I paid and signed up and I didn't, because I never got a link or any directions on how to find you at the time. Then there was so much going on here that after a couple of emails of SOS, I can't get on, I dropped it because Jacob was here and we had all this stuff going on. Maybe I never paid. Do you have a way of finding that out too? I hate to hand you all that, but whoever handles
that. Yeah, and today I'm on a board meeting with those people, so I'll get a definitive answer for you, and one way or another, get you access to those audios.
Great,
and
I'm happy to pay if I didn't, you know. So, yeah, and my friend was asking for them too. She was saying, you know, did you ever listen to them? What nuggets of wisdom did you get? And I said, well, not any so far, but I'm not giving up yet. Yeah. Thanks, Dr. Tim. Words of wisdom. And my daughter could, I'll relay these to my daughter, a little hope. She's struggling, too, with all this. So.
Well, of course, you know, one of the core pieces is the same as Richard Moss's work. It's the same as what Pam Grout is trying to get us to do. It's just, it's what Eckhart Tolle talks about in his book, The Power of Now. Can I just slow down? As a matter of fact, in the 15 Commitments of Conscious Leadership, that was the essentially the two commitments of number 10 and number 11 are, I commit to seeing the opposite of my story is as true or truer. And to see that, I've got to be willing to ask in the moment. I'm sorry, I meant to say number 11, that I commit to being the source of my own security, control, and approval. And then number 12, I commit to experiencing that I have enough of everything. Both of these lessons rely heavily on learning to be awake and aware in the present moment, learning to observe, like Pam Grout saying, just pick five new things about whatever you're looking at, whether it's the back of your hand, your friend, the coffee shop you're sitting in. And when you step into those exercises of the present moment, you begin to have this direct realization that you have enough, and you are enough in this moment. And all of the comparison, all of the judging is going to lead to that belief that you're not enough and you don't have enough. So any they even offer a meditation about being in the present moment, and they suggest that you do that every morning for their conscious leaders, and that you can pick a subject and learn to do a brief meditation each morning about sufficiency and having enough. And they quote Lynn Twist. You know Lynn Twist and her work?
No, I don't.
She does a lot of writing about money, and one of her concepts is sufficiency. And sufficiency is this, it's a mental concept that has nothing to do with the actual numbers of anything. It's this this idea that can come from this meditation that here in this moment, with my heart beating and my breath moving and my mind working enough to do this exercise, I have enough of everything I need in this moment. I can compare myself to somebody else and instantly find a belief that I don't have enough. I can project on into the future and say, I'm not going to have enough to make it through the next time period. And yet, in the moment, sufficiency is a concept I can choose. It's an experience I can step into in the present moment. And that's essentially what this Course in Miracles lesson is about today. That when I look at my current situation through the vision that a Christ mind will bring, there is nothing but peace. It's undisturbable and completely changeless. There is no comparison between one thing and another, because the Christ mind is able to see that there is only the one actuality. And yeah, there are things going on with your grandson. And yeah, there are things that need to be addressed and worked with. And the best way to get there is to be able to be calm, focused, and accepting in the moment. So like, you know, Winford Doerr, you can say, well, you know, here's all these businesses and all this money I have, and I'm helping other people with other projects. but I'm not really helping my daughter and people like her, so let me redirect all of my resources and my creativity and directly address a set of issues. But you do it from that calm, focused, centered space, and then you get a much more productive result.
All good thoughts.
And if you haven't done it lately, I encourage you to go to YouTube and look up Brad Yates and do some EFT tapping with him, because there's really good science that says when you do that EFT tapping and that nice focused breathing, you stimulate the relaxation response in the human energy system, that you decrease cortisol levels and you stimulate all kinds of good healing responses within the energy system. So whether you're tapping on dread or fear or sadness or hurt or loss or test anxiety or having enough, it's a really good efficient process for stimulating the relaxation response within the human. And anybody who thinks they're someone they love is going to have a lifetime diagnosis of misery could benefit from stimulating the relaxation response.
I think that's very true. Okay, Dr. Tim, thank you very much.
You're most welcome and deserving. And if you haven't listened to it yet, I recommend that interview with Catherine Adams on, you know, psychotic episodes in young people and early intervention. And
Yeah, I did listen to that, but I probably ought to listen to it again. It was a while back. Yeah.
And, of course, there's the Lyle Murphy one about, you know, alternative to meds in Sedona, Arizona, and all of the work they're doing there helping people with recovery and psychological process and nutrients, et cetera. Anything that helps you understand that the fatalistic, you know, diagnoses are really only one way to look at things.
Right. Good to remember.
All right, I will let you go, and
okay.
I'll just mute you so you can listen on, and we'll send loving thoughts and blessings to you and the whole family.
Thanks, Dr. Tim.
All right, blessings. So we have about 25 minutes left. 563-999-3581. Plenty of time for comments or questions or answers or testimonials. How have you found this work? Or are you just finding this work and you need some help understanding what all this work is about? We have a whole host of tools available absolutely free at whyagain.org. And if you go there and click on the Start Here link in the upper left-hand corner, it'll take you to a page where if you scroll down, you'll get access to a whole host of worksheet options and tools, not just the Reality Management Worksheet, but worksheets like the Three Early Memories of Conflict, the Mind Goal Management Sheet, the Mind Shifters Targeted Journaling Tool, the Codependent to Interdependence Worksheet, and on and on. And we are happy to discuss any of those with you. If you want to give us a call at 563-999-3581 and press 1. And we'll have a conversation. As I was mentioning, we've got a I'm working to pull up a book here. We have a meditation that was mentioned in the 15 Commitments of Conscious Leadership. And it is titled The Sufficiency Meditation. And they say that to experience the shift from scarcity to sufficiency in this moment, and they highlight the fact that what they're talking about here is sufficiency is a state of being, not just a data point. And so they recommend this meditation. Check in this moment to see what your experience is right now. In this moment, allow yourself to take a few deep breaths. Notice the air moving in and out of your lungs. And notice that the breath sustains you and that there is enough. Now bring your attention to your physical body. Pay attention to any sensations. Notice what is. See if there is anything lacking. Check to see in this moment, right now, what your experience is. As you breathe in, notice the wholeness of your physicality. In this moment, right now, notice your experience of time. In this moment, notice how there is no past and no future. There is only the now moment. The past is behind, the future is ahead. In this moment, what is your relationship with time? Notice that the edges of time begin to blur as the now moment refreshes itself, moment to moment to moment. Always now. And then check to see in this moment if you have enough time in this moment to be awake and aware in the now moment. As you continue this exercise, bring to your mind anything that you've been believing is scarce, that you don't have enough of. And check in this now moment if anything is missing or if you have everything you need to exist. You don't have excess, and you don't have scarcity. You have enough. Notice that when you are fully present in this now moment, you have plenty of everything. Everything is perfect because it just is. To experience scarcity, you must be outside yourself and outside the present moment. You must be anticipating the lack of something in the future or harboring the lack of something from the past. However, when there is just now, there is always enough. That's the meditation that they recommend every morning. And they recommend that you identify your beliefs about scarcity and then challenge them. They bring in a number of different experts, and the one they bring back in this work is Byron Katie and her questions called The Work. Those four questions. So when you discover that you have a scarcity belief. I don't have enough resources to help my grandson. I don't have enough finances. I don't have enough money to travel the way I want to. I don't have enough love in my life. I don't have enough name, fill in the blank. As you identify those scarcity beliefs, they highly recommend that you apply Byron Katie's four questions. Is it true? Simple yes or no answer. Can I absolutely know it's true? Simple yes or no answer. How do I feel when I believe it's true? And what would my life be like without this belief? And then the next thing they recommend is doing breath work. Experiment with the physical contrast between scarcity and sufficiency. Hold your breath for as long as you can and experience not having enough breath. And then breathe in a shallow way, almost as though you're panting like a dog, and notice the difference between no breath and some breath. And then notice that there's a feeling of scarcity or not enough. And then take a few deep belly breaths with slow exhale. And be aware of the experience of fullness. And reflect on whether you were staying present in each moment of the breath work or if you were anticipating a future moment. Lastly, they recommend notice space. Move through a crowded space and focus on the obstacles. This works particularly well in a busy airport. Approach your gate by trying to avoid people. Be in a hurry. Notice your thoughts and experiences. Then shift to placing all your attention on the gaps between people and allow yourself to move into empty space. What is your experience of movement from this mental paradigm? So, conscious leaders experience their lives as having enough of everything: time, money, love, energy, space, and resources. The scarcity belief that there is not enough causes leaders to focus on making sure that they get what is, quote, theirs, close quotes. The myth and myths that feed scarcity are that there is never enough, more is better, and it will always be this way. Again, if you have one of those myths running in your life, it would be a wonderful thing to apply the Byron Katie, the work, and her four questions to never enough, more is better, and it will always be this way. Conscious leaders focus on the toxic myth of insufficiency and shift from a mentality of scarcity to one of sufficiency. To unwind scarcity, conscious leaders notice their reference point and check in with themselves, actively challenging their beliefs. So, tomorrow we'll talk a little bit more about various commitments. Commitment 13 is a challenge for many people, and that is experiencing the world as an ally. That commitment reads like, I commit to seeing all people and circumstances, all people, all circumstances as allies that are perfectly suited to help me learn the most important things for my growth. The below-the-line commitment is, I commit to seeing other people and circumstances as obstacles and impediments to getting what I want most. So we'll explore some of that tomorrow and the difference between reactive and conscious leaders and how that commitment looks as it's applied in our lives. So, Our caller number is 563-999-3581. If you call that number and press 1, we can have a conversation. How can we support you today? What's on your mind? We have about 15 minutes left, or we could take an early launch into the recording that's going to be our second hour. And Michael and Jeannie are otherwise occupied for this next hour. And they've asked me to play a recording in their absence. It'd be a good thing if I can actually find it. It will be coming up as a worksheet that was done in our first year of the Mindshifters Radio with caller Lynn doing a worksheet on a whole bunch of things that were on her mind. And she started a worksheet. It'd be interesting. Maybe I don't have that one to play as I'm scrolling through our list of audios. So instead, I may play the similarities to AA programs that is a file that's available. So we have time. We've got about 13 minutes if somebody wants to call and comment or question. 563-999-3581. Call that number and press 1. We have plenty of people on the switchboard. Nobody in the chat room right now. And we have time for a comment or question before we launch into our second hour. How can we support you today? Well, that's interesting. I do not see the file by Lynn, or maybe I do. So we'll replay this. It's a powerful worksheet that was done in 2011, and Lynn called and started and said, I really want to do a worksheet, and in the middle of the process, she realized there was a much more powerful, poignant worksheet for her to do, and to this day, Dr. Michael Rice talks about this as being one of the most powerful worksheets he's ever been a part of. And I'll point out here for you to listen that by the time this is over, this woman releases some murderous rage that has been in her energy system for over 20 years. And it's an amazing thing when, you know, you might miss it if you're not listening for it, but near the end when there is a dramatic shift, it's also revealed that she's been in this list of hateful thoughts and murderous thoughts toward people that did something 20 years before this worksheet process was done. And this is not the norm. People don't often get a release this deep and profound, and yet it can happen, and here's evidence of it. So we'll start this early, and we'll be back again all week long. And here is Lynn calling in to do a worksheet from our first year of the Internet show back in 2011. I'll remind us all that we come from love. We're made of the stuff we call love. We actually are love, and everything else is false.
Welcome to Mindshifters Radio. It's a delight to have you with us on Tuesday, the 2nd of August, a new month unfolding. In our world, and day. I've lost track of the days, but we're still celebrating Memorial Day. Anybody who chooses to join us in doing that, our invitation to you is that you become willing to look at something in your world that you hold that's based in some form of hostility or fear that you're willing to forgive. And when we talk about forgiveness, we're not talking about letting somebody else off the hook because something's going on in you. Forgiveness is a tool with which you go inside yourself and remove what never belonged. And that's what we're here to support you in. And we invite you to tap into our website, www.whyagain.com. www.whyagain.com. And on the right-hand side, you'll see a link that says Download Worksheets. We invite you to tap into that link and to look at the first three links under that section, and those first three links are the how-to of forgiveness, the internal process of forgiveness. And the difference between the classic, you know, the way the world does forgiveness and the way we're talking about it is that in the classic form of forgiveness in our culture, everybody's got everybody else to blame but is willing to forgive them, so let them off the hook for what's happening inside. And of course, it's pretty ridiculous to let somebody else off the hook for what's happening inside of you, something that you've created. And so the idea is to be willing to step in and be responsible for everything that's in you. And if there are things you've been blaming somebody else for, that's done by a little trick of mine called projection. And we invite you to undo your projections. How do you undo your projections? Well, that's what the reality management or forgiveness worksheet is about. That's the Aramaic way of undoing whatever belonged. And so, welcome to the show. If you've got a question for us or a thought, if you're doing worksheets or using any of the other tools and have questions about them, we would love to hear from you about your questions. And our phone number, call in, 646-200-4169. We'd love to hear your voice. I don't know if you're there, Lynn, but if you are, we've been conversing the last couple of days, and I would love to carry on our conversation in support of where you're heading with the process of forgiveness and with the tools. So, Jeannie, do we have any callers or anything in the chat room at this moment?
No, we've got Tim and David both on the line now, but we don't have anybody. I actually got bumped out of the chat room. I don't know what's going on. It says somebody else signed in and kicked me out, so I don't know how that happens. But so I'm just now signing back into the chat room. But we don't have any questions yet.
All right. Well, good morning, David and Tim. Welcome.
Good morning.
Or good afternoon, I guess. I'm still doing the show from back in Oregon in morning time, but it's afternoon here, too, 1 o'clock. So we missed you yesterday, Dr. Kim.
Well, it's really good to be back. I had lunch with two charming ladies yesterday. I sent you an email about that, and I tried to respond to your phone call earlier today, but I did get your note, and I'm looking forward to talking to you about possibilities for later in the month.
Cool.
And I'm sorry that I missed the show yesterday, but I'm sure it was enlightening, and I'll catch it on the replays.
Well, I'm sure it was worth it to spend the lunch time with two young ladies. That's awesome.
It was, Christy and her granddaughter.
Oh, neat. Neat. Well, tell Christy I said hello and send her love.
Will do. Well, so what was the big topic yesterday?
Well, we mainly talked, you remember on Friday we talked with Lynn, who was talking about some challenges and opportunities with alcohol. And so we shared some ideas with Lynn about forgiveness and some of the challenges there. She had some openings on how to use the worksheet. And so it was really good conversation. I think everybody got a lot out of it. So it was excellent.
Well, great. So she got to call in yesterday? Instead of just being in the chat room?
Yeah. Yep, and we invited her to call in again today to continue the conversation because it was really productive for everybody. But there's some, you know, some core questions and core issues, which it's always good to have that live interaction with somebody who's actually in there doing the work in order to tap in and do what comes next in the process of healing. And we are on the, let's see, the 16th day of teacher's training here. And
we have a caller.
Finish tomorrow. Oh, cool. Fabulous. Who have we got?
Area code 603.
603, I think that's Lynn.
Linda.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Well,
glad you're
today,
calling
young lady.
In.
It's me again.
Cool. Do you prefer Lynn or Linda?
My name is Lynn.
Lynn.
Okay, cool. Cool. Well, let me just finish a thought I was putting out, Lynn, and we'll get into our conversation. But we're just finishing teacher's training, and then we have a day off between sessions, and the next day we start, on the 5th, we start the 16-day Laws of Living. So things are rocking here at Heartland, a small but mighty group of teachers. Absolutely awesome the way the people who are here studying teacher's training, every person in the class has a quantum leap in understanding of actually teaching the work compared to any of the teacher trainings we've done in the last, I'm not even sure, I've been doing teacher's training for about 15 years. And so to me, it's an indicator we're getting close to critical mass. People are really understanding it and putting it to work. So delighted to be here sharing with you. So Lynn, what's on your mind today?
Well, I'd like to share that since I've been doing these worksheets and the work, I'm having far less reaction to things, or at least when they start to come, I can stop and see that it's a reaction right then and there.
Awesome.
And yeah, it is really awesome. And this morning, specifically, I got... there's been an ongoing challenge with my father's estate. He passed a year ago, and I got news this morning that his house that the executor was to sell was just, like, left sitting there, and now it has such a bad mold problem it can't sell without either a huge infusion of money or, you know, taking a terrific loss on it. So I immediately went to blame the executor of the estate, who seems quite incompetent, there's my judgment, for doing this. And I stopped myself from blame. I'm stopping myself from blaming her. But now this all just happened within the last hour. And I'm just starting a worksheet on her now with this, so I'm wondering if we could do that together. What I learned yesterday, Michael, and I spoke with another gentleman on the show when your voice went off, is that for me to go right after the alcohol is not the place to go. It's to really look at all the other stuff that's going on, and that my tendency in my life has always been to find a quick fix, say it's done, and move on. But it's still there.
Right.
And what I really got to see yesterday that's really exciting it for me is, okay, quick fixes, you know, I got to give them up. And maybe I need to do a worksheet on quick fixes.
There you go.
Because I've done a million quick fixes, not, you know, some around alcohol, but everything else in my life that hasn't worked or, you know, that has been troublesome. You know, basically, I think any time I hit these dissociated projections, I'm, you know, I go find something that makes me feel, okay, that's done, that's taken care of. And now I just see it's a process. It's going to, you know. The rest of my life.
Absolutely.
And I am so grateful that I have this time, you know, that I have all the resources with the work that I have. I'm going to a group tonight locally. And so My next thing is to do worksheets on quick fixes and the estate executor who just really dropped the ball.
if you look at what's happening for you, what it sounds like, and I can remember the day that somebody gave me a greeting card, and it said, you open the greeting card, and it said, how to manage your life, or pardon me, the cover of it, and when you open it, it said, don't get personally involved in it. And it sounds like you're developing the ability to step back from your mind and watch what your carbon-based memory does, how it just spits out and spews out whatever it is. And whenever there's more stress than you can handle, the stress management device in the past has been, well, I just use a little alcohol, then my stress goes down. Of course, when my stress goes down, I knock out the inhibitors, so I do behaviors with which tomorrow I'll get to have more stress, but, you know, that momentary quick fix. And so just, you know, to build the brain cells for as you develop the ability to step apart from your mind, to become the thinker apart from your thought, the feeler apart from the feelings, the actor apart from your actions, and don't get personally involved in your own life. That you don't believe everything your carbon-based memory has to say. You know, there's a worksheet on the website and a DVD called Healing Through Relationships. And in that worksheet, we ask people to do three early memories of conflict. And most people outline in their lives 95% of the conflict that will ever occur in those simple three offhanded early memories, the dynamics and the principles. And when you can step away from that and start disbelieving what your body's mind tells you, all that this body's mind can do is replicate, and if it replicates stress and pain, then whatever mechanisms we found successful, that's what we'll tend to get stuck in. So, awesome. Sounds like you're right on track.
Great. Yeah.
Yeah. So do you have a specific question about the worksheet at this point?
No, I don't. I haven't done the worksheet yet with the estate executor or the quick fixes. This is like just getting really clear in the last literally hour before the show started today. So I guess I'll do that worksheet, and then if I have questions on them, I'll dial in again.
Fabulous. Absolutely. You'd be most welcome to do that. And if you'd like, we could take a look and you know, kind of go through the format that you might want to use, say, for instance, with the executor. And, you know, some people would say, well, gee, in that situation, does that mean I just have to lay down and take it? And, oh, well, you know, I lose, the house gets destroyed or what have you? No. You've come from a space where you can hold the executor totally, completely accountable, but you don't have to create stress, trauma, pain, and reasons to bring over what the executor does. And what the body's mind, what the replicate mind will tend to do, or what we call the body's mind will tend to do, is it will tend to take its pattern, oh, look, they screwed up, now I'm in pain, in stress, therefore I have a reason to drink. The option to that is, oh, I see that over them not doing it right. Gee, has that ever been an issue in my life, doing it right? That I have pain and stress. So if I come at them out of my pain and stress, I'll simply increase my pain and stress and end up with more of the same. I think what I'll do first, instead of starting right out with trying to take the beam or the speck out of their eye, I think I'll go look at the beam in my own. What's the beam in
okay,
my eye?
Okay, so so to make that concrete, 1A, I put in Brenda, the executor.
Right.
1B, what happened is she didn't take care of the house for a year, and now it's difficult to sell, and there's a lot of loss of money.
Right.
One way or the other.
Right.
So 1C is I'm pissed. That's my money. And the thought behind it is she's incompetent.
Oh, I don't know.
She didn't do it. She didn't do it right. She didn't do it right.
She didn't do it right. Okay. So then my thought that causes me to be in the feeling of anger, et cetera.
Right.
She's not doing it right. And then it can help, you know, on the right-hand side, there's that little box, draw your feelings. What's your feeling about that? And
yeah, it's anger.
Yep. And what's your punishment thought?
Well,
I
want to lash out and tell her she's incompetent and she, you know, she owes that money that's been lost, you know, comes out of her take.
Right.
And yep. if I don't do that, oh, this is great, Michael. If I don't do that, I just want to go drink.
Perfect.
Well, I probably,
so
I want to do both. The anger, yeah. In order to deal with the anger in me, I want to drink so I don't feel that.
So we call this sin, self-induced nonsense. I have an energy in me that's off the mark. Yeah, I have an energy in me that's off the mark, and that's what the word sin means. It's an archery term. You missed the bullseye. And as a result of that energy in me that's off the mark, I have pain, and my anesthetic is alcohol. And my other anesthetic is hostility, rage at her. Hostility is an internally produced drug that anesthetizes us against pain. And when you look at your punishment thought, you know, you walk past the feeling, you look at your punishment thought, you know, there's another worksheet that we do that's an advanced worksheet. This one is the base key ideas, but there's another worksheet that we do where we, in essence, ask the question to remember when someone did what it is that you want to do to punish to you. And what we know by the codependence work that we do is that this is a pretty high level of stress for you. And when we're in high level stress, what the carbon-based memory system, the body's mind, will tend to do until we clean this energetic dynamic out of it, which is what the forgiveness is about, what the body's mind will counsel us to do is whatever our power person did to us that we hated the most.
Punish,
so,
yeah.
By what you just shared with us, what we know is that your power person used to rage at you and take things away from you. Is that accurate?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yep.
Absolutely.
Yep.
Yeah, I lived
so just
in
to be
my
able
whole
to, childhood. Notice what
fear.
Just happened with your breath there. Notice what's just happened. There was an opening in your breath, and that's where that opening occurs. When we were abused in those ways by the power person, we locked that energy in with the breath. And when you soften the breath and can open it,
whew,
that's when you can let go of that punishing.
Yeah, that's true, because up until now in talking with you, I felt a bit out of breath, and I don't feel that at the moment. Is that what you mean? That you heard the shift?
I could hear the shift in your voice. It was just that little energetic shift that took place. And that's where, in the ancient teachings, they said, and this is all about just doing our work. It isn't about theology. In the ancient teachings, they said, the veil of the temple must be rent in twain, that is, torn in two. The veil is the barrier between the subconscious and the unconscious. The unconscious in the ancient teachings was called the heart. They said, take care of the heart, for out of it are the issues in life. So I play out my behaviors from an unconscious or a dissociated state of mind. That's
I didn't understand that. Take care of
Take care of the heart, for out of it are the issues in life. That word heart in the language we're speaking of in this work would be the dissociated mind. So when my power person abused and took things from me, I held my breath. I created a veil. I created an unnatural barrier, and I hid that painful experience from myself. And now that it's hidden from me, whenever a situation comes along that resonates that, i.e., my power person did that to me when I didn't do it right. So when somebody comes along that doesn't do it right, I'm controlled by the pain and trauma in my own dissociated mind and do the behaviors of my power person. And it is so painful that I can't look at it. So holding the breath when that comes up, after it's happened 1,000 times, holding the breath isn't enough to keep it locked down. So I look around and go, well, what can I use next? Oh, I'll use rage. Rage is an internally produced chemical that anesthetizes feeling. So, gee, I rage and I go, now I feel powerful. Now I feel better. Now I don't feel weak and hurt like this content of my dissociated mind. And when I can calmly step back from my own dissociated states, there come a point as I start to observe where my breath will, as it did for you a moment ago, spontaneously open. And that, bang, clears out a piece of that dissociated information. Just takes it out of the space.
So the heart is the dissociated mind?
The heart is the dissociated mind or the unconscious. And that word heart, that's unconscious.
Beautiful. That's beautiful.
Say again?
That's beautiful. I mean,
you know, we've labored in the Western world for almost 2,000 years not being able to translate that word. Nobody, until Freud rediscovered the unconscious, nobody understood what was being spoken about when they said, take care of the heart for whatever the issues in life. You must forgive from your heart the wrongs of your brother. You know, from the Greek translation, that sounded like some kind of misleading heart statement.
Yeah.
But what they were saying was, and you know, in the context of our conversation, is, Lynn, you must remove from your unconscious that which you just blamed the executor for, your pain and rage and fear. You must remove from your heart the wrongs of your brother. And when you do, the executor does the behavior they do, and you go, that isn't right. How shall we work out your accountability for this, rather than I go into my trauma, my holding breath to dissociate, my increased stress, my rage to dissociate, my triple increased stress, give me a fifth of scotch. Now I feel better. Well, actually, I don't feel better. I don't feel.
Right.
God, I'm anesthetized. Take 2 molecules of alcohol, take the water out, you got ether.
Right.
And so forgiveness is stepping back and observing, this is all just carbon-based memory. This is your carbon-based memory system, we talked about that the other day, is a multi-generational database that just carries all these insane dynamics from generation to generation to generation. And when it becomes too painful, when that resonance becomes too much to handle, that's when I reach for my drug of choice. And, of course, you know, we live in a culture that's so drug-oriented, you can hardly go into even a food store and not buy foods that aren't laced with drugs, sugar, caffeine,
right,
nicotine, junk food, you know, I mean, on and on it goes.
So I think I'm seeing from what you're saying is, before I got into the alcohol, which is only relatively recent in my life, my checkout, how I anesthetized myself was depression.
Mm-hmm.
Is depression another anesthesia?
Yes. It's just anger turned inward.
Yeah.
Depression is the adult form of temper tantrum. I'm really pissed that this is happening. I'm not allowed to do that because if I did that, my power person beat the hell out of me or disapproved of me or whatever. So now I lock all that anger inside and I'm classified as depressed. And if you look between legal and illegal antidepressants, probably at least 70% of the culture is on antidepressants.
Right. Well, that's what alcohol has. I mean, it makes the depression worse, but at least when I'm using it, I don't feel it. I don't feel anything.
Right.
So.
So the thing to recognize is that it's safe to feel, it's safe to look at the truth, it's safe to open the veil of your temple and come face to face with what's in there. Because what you can do is you can just throw it all away and be done with it. It's just a generational pattern. You know, they said, when in the physics language, the sins of the father would be passed, yea, into 3 and 4 generations. Go back and look at your preceding generations. How did they manage stress?
Trouble.
Punishment.
Depression.
Oh, my God. So now, as you rise above that and move to choice, you can remove all of that. Removing it is called forgiveness. So in the classic forgiveness mode, someone would say to you, your therapist might say, well, you know, that what your executor did was really nasty, really bad and wrong, but just let them off the hook. Forgive them. Which, of course, does nothing to change what's happening inside of you. What we're going to move in the direction of is looking at what's in your heart that you project into your brain's image of the executor so that you can delete what's in your heart. And then, with the connected mind of love, you can go to the executor and say, you know, you didn't do your job, and the terms of your job were this. And so how would you propose, or here's how I propose, that you take care of the deficiency in your task? Oh, you're not willing to do that? Okay. Well, then the next step is I'll just have to legally hold you accountable, because that's what our culture does, is it holds people accountable legally. So I love you, I bless you, I honor you, but you know, you really did screw up. And you don't sit in trauma and pain stewing for days, weeks, months, and years as many people do over it. You know, you hear people talk about something like that 20 years later, and they're still in their unconscious rage about it. You can be done with it today.
Well, this brings up a much bigger situation.
Shocking.
Pardon? What?
I say how shocking.
What I do, stay with Brenda or segue into the new one?
Well, you know, if you look in almost all of the religious traditions of the world, they have a set of beads. You know, if you look at the Buddhists or the Catholics, beads that they use. The beads are symbolic. You know, if you're familiar, say, for instance, with the Catholic rosary, people do a series of prayers on the rosary.
I
do a Hail Mary.
Yeah,
I have
the Buddhist beads. Yep.
So they do 10 little ones, and then, bang, they do an Our Father. There's the big one. And they do 10 little ones, a big one. The beads are symbolic. It's a way of communicating to one that we're going to go deeper and deeper and deeper into our own unconscious dynamics. And it's like a set of beads. You pull up an issue, and then it'll connect you to another issue, to another, to another. And you just start pulling this string of issues out until you've cleaned out your multi-generational database. And then you have this awesome gift from the Creator called a human form into which you incarnate and create your life and play.
I love your definition of love, human life.
Yeah, I mean, hold the newborn. It's really easy to tell what human life is. All you have to do is just hold a newborn, and most people are not living humans.
Okay, they're Michael, dead. Where do I go? This other issue's coming up, and it's just flooding and overwhelming. Where do I go now?
Okay. So you notice over on the right-hand side of the worksheet, there's a column there to put some notes about the other worksheets that you're going to do.
Okay.
Tap in, and if it feels like something more important is coming forward than doing this one, then you might want to just pull another worksheet and we'll start another one. Or you might just make notes over in the right-hand column, okay, I need to do a worksheet on, you know, being abused for this, so, you know, all the times I watched dad or mom get drunk and I was left alone and felt like I didn't have a parent, you know, what have you.
Could we start the other one right now?
Sure.
Okay. It's 1A is the Oregon Medical Board. They removed my license 20 some years ago because I was treating the charge at the time that started the investigation was I was treating cancer with nutrition.
Right.
And it was precipitated by a patient, a 16-year-old with lymphoma who was a ward of the state. And his guardian, appointed guardian, took him to me instead of back to the oncologist for radiation and chemo for his lymphoma. And under my care, he went into remission, which turned out to be permanent. Well, this infuriated the oncologist, so he reported me to the board. And it, it started a 5-year investigation, at the end of which, you know, they were trying to find something on me of incompetence or negligence or, you know, harmfulness or unprofessional conduct, but they couldn't. They investigated me for years, and then at the end of the investigation, when I challenged their illegal means for trying to nail me, they took my license for not cooperating with them. It was just a very dirty turn. So, you know, and I've carried that rage with them for 20-some years. So it's like I haven't known what to do with it.
Yeah.
And
so notice that this is a similar issue.
It's the same, yeah.
There's a resonance, but here it is. In fact, there's a book about that. I think it's called Why Is This Happening to Me Again?
Right.
Pretty good stuff. So then number 1A, the medical board. By the way, have you seen a film entitled Brzezinski?
Oh, I know Dr. Brzezinski, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, they put a film, a documentary out. Exactly what you want true, and they've documented it all.
Right.
It's awesome.
I know. I mean, he's held on. It's just amazing.
It is amazing. His courage is just phenomenal. Anyway, so then after you put down the medical board, you put your initials. Because notice that, and I have no idea, but everybody that was on the medical board that played that out with you, perhaps today, 20 years later, is dead. You're still carrying it around in your body. And it's so painful that it drives you to...
drink.
Yeah. Or
rage. I mean, I didn't drink... Yeah, rage, and the drinking didn't start until quite a bit after all of that.
Right.
But
yep.
It was my only resort.
Yep. And... I think Jeannie's got contact information for you. I've got somebody else I'll put you in touch with that might help you to resolve that issue in another way, too. So describe what happened. Unjustly took my license, my livelihood, and that's exactly what the executive is doing, right? Unjustly taking your livelihood, your inheritance.
Uh-huh.
Fair loss ties right in.
This is also...
This time, you were the one. Say again?
It's also connected. You know, it's like this money from my father's estate. I mean, he yanked any support for me during medical school, during my first year of medical school. I worked the rest of medical school to support myself because I didn't do what he wanted me to do that year. You know, it's like, so he withheld the money, and I went to medical school anyway on my own recognizance entire, you know, it's just so bizarre the way this is all.
Well, again, if you jump on, when we finish the show, jump on the website and under that download worksheet section, download the three early memories exercise, or you might want to order a copy of the video of healing through relationships and the codependence video. But as you do those three early memories, what you'll find is that you... just three simple, silly, offhanded childhood memories, and you will have written about 95% of the trauma in your life. And the behaviors that control you your whole life long, the behaviors with which you've destroyed relationships, destroyed yourself, et cetera, et cetera. You know, we can just go on and on with it.
Right.
And
you said three early memories worksheet?
Three early memories worksheet. Yeah, it's totally self-explanatory.
Okay. I just want to make sure I wrote that.
If you want to download it, you know, you can call back in if you want to download it. You need some support in filling it out. So now in that situation, my feelings resonated by this unjust taking of my livelihood.
It was, I mean, rage and fear. Lost both.
Lost both, okay. So then the thought, behind the rage is? What would your thought be if you took a deep breath and just touched into that rage around that issue? What is your thought that you think? Let yourself become fully conscious of the thought you think in order to feel rage in that situation.
Whew.
Good, good. There's the breath. Notice the relief that came with that?
Yep. I still don't have the thought, but something shifted, yeah.
So the thought's probably something like, how dare they take, I'm doing the right thing and they take my livelihood? Something like that, maybe? Or who are they to have that kind of power over me?
Yeah, it's more about their power. Like,
okay. Which is the issue with that, right? And having the power to take away your support while you're going to school. Same issue.
Which is the issue of what? I didn't hear that word.
The same issue. The same issue as with Dad.
Oh, with Dad, yeah.
Him
taking away
your support when you were going to medical school.
Yep. Yeah, it's that I'm raging at the power, that power over me.
Okay.
Yeah, so the thought is no one should have that power over me.
Okay. And then, so that's the one on the rage, and now on the fear. What's the fear? What's the thought behind fear when you think of that whole thing?
It's livelihood, but it's also who I am. I don't get to create my creative expression. I just love being a doctor.
So
I love being a doctor.
They can take away my means of self-expression.
Yeah. Yep.
And what do you want to do to punish them?
I always go back to this picture of having a gun and them walking on my property. There were threats on my life during all of this back in the 80s, and my child, and my house. And I moved to the country, and I saw myself up on the cabin in the hill with a gun, and I had a dog who would bark, and if they came on my property, I wanted just to shoot them.
Yeah. I want to punish by killing, destroying.
Destruction.
Yes. Breathe. Because notice what you're doing with your, to yourself.
Yep. Yep, I just got myself I held my breath. I got into the rage.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So then number two is I choose to love truth. I willingly go through the physical, mental, and emotional symptoms of healing. Now, in order to believe that all these feelings and these thoughts are caused by the medical board, you have to deny and dissociate from your power person dynamic, where this was all done to you by your power person. So that means that you're allowing your mind to tell you a lie. Most people love their lies, so number one is the absolute truth. They are sticking to their story, and they want to be right about how it's their fault. But while I'm being right about it's their fault, my physiology is going nuts. And that's my physiology's call to 911 to say, there's an emergency happening here in my tissue structure. I need to deal with this. So number two is I choose to love truth. So I choose to love truth in this situation. Ah, this isn't about the medical board. And as I get clear of the unconsciousness around this, I may choose to go back and do something about it. But I'm going to love truth enough to let my mind show me the real root of this issue so that I can clear it out. And when I start to move it out, it's not going to be Dr. Feelgood. So I'm willing to go through the physical, mental, emotional symptoms of healing. That means that you're very likely to go back to the most intense peak trauma moments in that event 20 years ago and feel them in your physiology. Feel them in your emotions. Feel them in your heart.
Yep.
And see the pictures in your mind. And what you want to do is hold the space of love for yourself. Connect the love and allow those energies to move through you and out of you. Because it's that pain when it's resonated that drives you to need an anesthetic.
Yeah, I get that, yeah.
Cool. Now, so just step into it. Choose to love truth and, like, you know, really start to train your mind. You're willing to go for truth, and I'm willing to go through the physical, mental, and emotional symptoms of healing. So on a physical health level, healing looks like any kind of physical symptom you've ever had and low energy. On a mental level, it's any kind of negative thought you've ever had, confusion. On an emotional level, it's any kind of negative feeling you've ever had from depression. So I'm willing to go through that. I'm willing to let my veil open, let my breath flow, and be with that, whatever it feels like.
You know, I got really sick the day of the last kangaroo court where the medical board was the judge, jury, and prosecutor. And I got really sick that day, and it turned into what is now, you know, what is called medically chronic fatigue and fibromyalgia. And, you know, I never, of course, fully recovered from that because I've been whole. You know, you just said this thing about, you know, it's in the tissues, you know. And as soon as you said that, it's like
nobody can carry that kind of mental and emotional burden and the chemistry that results. Remember, yesterday we read the stuff from Candace Pert.
Right.
How our thought produced the neuropeptide, lands in the cell, becomes a chemical messenger in the cell. And that's a hellish burden for the cell. And until you forgive, until you remove that burden from the cell, cell is going to be walking around, you know, and just think about a cell carrying this huge bag of garbage on its back. That's what chronic fatigue is.
And I lost my sleep.
Because we've not been given the tool of forgiveness.
Right.
We've not been shown how to remove that stuff. Good. Nice breathing.
Yeah.
So number three, the thing that causes your mind in the situation with the medical board and with the original worksheet that you're talking about with the executive of the state is that you have a goal for whoever it is you're pinning that on. Your mind generates a reality from your dissociated content about anyone you set a goal toward that resonates that dissociated content. So the thing to look at is, what did you want from them? So I love, in number three, I love, want number 1A, the medical board, two, and you want to state the exact goal you have in positive words for them. What did you want from them?
I wanted them to see who I am, the integrity of my work, the results
write
of my work.
Okay, so write each of those down. Write each of those down. See who I am. See the results of my work. The integrity of my work. What else? And find me in another.
Appreciate me.
Appreciate you. Okay, cool. So if you got those written down, without knowing one bit of detail about what went on with your relationship with what sounds like was your power person, Dad, if you would be doing a worksheet on Dad, would each of those things be precisely?
I've done several worksheets on Dad already. I started worksheets on Dad.
Okay.
And number three,
so are these
Number three on the earlier worksheet I did on Dad is Dad should let me be. Let me be me. Dad should be there
recognize
for and
I
love.
Am.
Yep.
Love
Dad
you,
should
appreciate
be
you.
Be there for and love who, what I am. It's, yeah, it's the same thing.
It's apart, precisely the same.
Yeah.
Bingo.
Mm-hmm.
This is called Why Am I Doing This to Myself Again?
I knew the medical board was Dad again. I didn't have to get myself out from under all this.
Right. So let's move forward, and we'll show you how to collapse that so that you can move that energy out. So you've got your goal in number three. Now, the two things have to happen simultaneously in order for healing to occur, real, true, deep healing of those cellular neuropeptides that create the load. One of them is that I have to access what's hidden there. We'll show you how to
do
that.
I have to access what?
The other one is you have to access what's locked in the cell. You have to convert it back from the neuropeptide to the thought. Let yourself get in touch with the thought that is now a neuropeptide in the cell.
Okay.
So that's one part, and we'll show you how to do that in a minute. The other part is you need to have the active presence of love there. So
right.
Step number four assures that you're doing that. So I choose to reconnect to my original being and think of yourself, you know, imagine holding that newborn. And somebody held you and went, what an awesome presence of love.
Mm-hmm.
So look in the eyes of the newborn. Smile. Let yourself have a really wide smile that reaches up and let the energy of your smile actually move to the frontal lobes of the brain. That activates the thing from the Aramaic called Rachma. And it is the gateway that presence is love in our physiology. It's the word
uh-huh.
that they said the first law was, you know, and the Greeks translated, you got to love your neighbor, like it's something you do toward your neighbor. Nothing to do with it. The first law was have Rachma toward neighbor. Your father, the medical board, and the executor are your neighbors. And
right.
It has nothing to do with the behavior you do toward them. It has to do with keeping the gateway open to keep your human life alive in your physiology. Rachma. So that's what you're doing when you're smiling and warming the frontal lobes of the brain. You're opening that and reestablishing love. It is the presence of that love when it gets to the dissociated part of the mind that dissolves the dissociated information.
Mm-hmm.
See, that's
dissolves. Yeah. Cool. Mm-hmm. Yep. Soon as you said it, the smile came. Yep. Yep.
Awesome. Cool. All right, then. So now, in number one, you've got a reality based in hostility or fear. One of the things we point out in the Why Is This Happening to Me Again workshop is, any reality based in hostility or fear comes from corrupt data, and it's false. It's a lie. And so I need to collapse the lie. I need to collapse the projection. And so 5A, in order to collapse my false reality, be liberated from my hostility / fear, and get back to my actual mind and the truth about me and my object of attention, I cancel. In Aramaic, the word is shebang. I go for it, and you bring exactly what you wrote in number three. And I would suggest that I think you've got actually four different worksheets here. So let's just take one of those things that you won from the medical board. Just take one of them from number three and bring it down to number five. And then I'd repeat this part of the worksheet with each of those four goals, because I think if I remember correctly, you had actually four different goals for them. Take just one of them.
Okay, see who I am.
Number five.
I cancel my goal for the medical board to see who I am. Okay.
And then, now that goal is the driver that causes your mind to use that dissociated, that painful information around being seen for who you are to build your brain's image of them. And so by collapsing it, you get to the, you can now start instead of just seeing that dissociated information when it's projected into someone else, the executor, the medical board, dad, whatever, by canceling the goal and collapsing the projection, I now open directly the dissociated part of my mind, where now as I bring love into that part of my mind and I bring forward what I've dissociated from, I'm now in direct relationship with it, can change it. And it's a pattern that probably goes back 1,000 generations. And so the second step in 5B is you need a helper. You know, there's some Harvard research that says in a time frame where 10,000 brain cells fire the max amount of information that gets into conscious awareness with 9-bit fragment. And so we talk about it as, you know, we have this 9-bit mind. It's a pea brain. And you can't even start to think about reaching into 1,000 generations of insanity with the 9-bit mind. But what Yeshua taught 2,000 years ago was that there was a power in you, in Aramaic, it was called Ruach HaKodesh. And it literally means a feminine elemental force that when invited into activity undoes the effects of our errors and teaches us the truth. The denial of which is the error that leaves us in unforgiveness. So this is in our modern language, we could say the superprocessor. This is the superprocessor that can reach to the very depths of our genetics and remove every neuropeptide that went into each generation that never belonged there. And so with willingness, I invite, and there's a blank there so that, you know, whatever you choose to name it, some people call it the higher power, God, Holy Spirit, whatever term you use. I think
yep,
there's a vibratory effect to Ruka.
I invite Mother Mary. I invite Mother Mary.
Well, okay. So I invite Mother Mary to incline me toward healing, to really be there as support, to restore me to my original nature love, to assist me in keeping love present, and to help me to come into direct conscious relationship with and remove dissociated and projected parts of my carbon-based memory. And breathe.
Yeah.
I want to go through that stuff.
I have help.
How you feel? Yeah.
I'm breathing.
How do you feel
yep.
to do that?
I'm breathing,
breathing
and I'm smiling.
Okay.
I'm breathing.
So number six, I now feel, as you're smiling, is the word lighter? Is it, what is it?
Yeah, definitely lighter. Lighter works. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I now feel, I'm smiling and feel lighter.
I feel relieved. I feel relieved, yeah. I feel, lighter.
Cool.
Mm-hmm.
That's what forgiveness does. And then about the situation number 1B. So number 1B was the medical board took away my license. About that situation, what can you see now after doing that forgiveness process? How does that whole situation look to you at this moment?
My response is, it happened.
Yeah.
It just happened. The medical board was doing the medical board what the medical board does.
Right. Okay, cool. Awesome. And notice that instead of raging, you're laughing. That's what human life does in the presence of life, even when life isn't doing what it wants to have done. However, non-human life, non-being rages and grieves and pains and traumas because that's what we've inherited from 1,000 generations of insanity.
And what just flashed on my mind, you know, one of the hearings, I had hearings locally, you know, in the hospital because they didn't want me to use any of their facilities, you know, because of my entanglement with the board. And of course, the oncologist was leading the local hearings. But he sat there, red-faced, smoking a cigarette, blowing it in my face. And I'm just, you know, I mean, talk about the – it was like I just – And then when I applied for a license 10 years later in another state, the same thing happened. You know, a man just red-faced leaned across the table and just telling me how despicable I am. And I just had this overwhelming, you know, just wonderful wash over of compassion for these people that are, wow, wow. you know, to that are in that experience.
That's what human life does instead of suffering. Human life instead is able to look and go, oh, my God. Do you remember Yeshua says, there's so many times, if only you'd known it, what I wanted to do was just bring you like a mother chick under my wings and support you and heal you.
Mm.
I remember working with the dean of the medical school in another state back a few years ago, and after we'd done some breath work and some forgiveness work, I offered him the thought, what do you suppose it would be like if medical school were a warm, loving environment where they brought people to be nurtured and healed and sent them out as healers? And he just sat there with his mouth open, like, what a radical thought. And a year later, he quit as the dean of medical school to start working to take alternative medicine into the medical schools.
Hmm.
The presence of love is what heals insanity. More insanity doesn't heal insanity.
Right.
And so as you work through a particular issue in your life, you get to be the space where that issue can be evaporated from planet Earth. That's how we're going to end war. That's how the whole game is going to change.
Yeah, absolutely. And the pain that Dad lived with, you know, it was just huge.
Unbearable.
Huge. Yeah.
So Liz, like yourself,
Michael,
like yourself up to this point, he had no tools. Yes, sir.
I just have to say for everyone in the chat room and everybody else who's been listening on the phone, thank you so much, Lynn, for your courage and for your example. It's been amazing.
Well,
awesome.
Thank
it's
you.
Be a great recording to be able to download. But because we've only got about 3 minutes left, let's do the last piece of the worksheet so we can complete this while we're still here together on the phone. Actually, we're down to a very short time. We may not do our outro this day, today. So in number 7, what you want to do is create a new loving goal. You know, in the ancient scriptures, they talked about the evil spirits that were removed from the man. In Aramaic, it doesn't speak about spirits. It says thought. When the neuropeptides have been accessed that are the burden to the cell and removed, if you don't put something back into place, remember they said 7 worse came to take habitation? Mind will just want to create more of the same. And so what you do here is we suggest at least 2 goals, truth and perfect love. Hey, wherever I go in my world, I'm willing to look at the truth. I'm willing to function as that compassion and that perfect love. And then what would a loving goal be toward the medical board?
I wish them love and truth.
Awesome. Awesome. You got it, young lady. I've called forgiveness. And everybody applauds your willingness. That's awesome. And we're going to run out of time. We're not going to do our outro today. Any final thoughts? We've just got a few seconds.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor Michael Wright and his wife Jean, who present the internal Aramaic process of forgiveness.